that driving. Bill Lane crosses up. Van Vliet, okie doke move, and lays it up for two. Lee with a nifty move there.
He could go all the way, and the freshman takes it to the house with no time on the clock. Are you kidding me? He takes it 60 yards. Welcome to Redbird Nation.
And the shoe. She gives it to Katie Broadway. Broadway taking it herself down the left side. No good. But she's going to get her own rebound. Kicks it out. Kansas State quickly down. It's good.
She got it.
Kansas State for three.
From local high school action to the birds and the pros, with live interviews, reporting, debate, and discussion, WZND's Red Zone brings you all the sports you can handle each week. The Red Zone starts now, only on 103.3 WZND, the pulse of Redbird Nation.
Happy Thursday, birds. Happy opening day to all of you who celebrate, the baseball fans of the world. Welcome into the Red Zone, 103.3 WZND. I'm Mikey Frinelli, joined by Braden Fogerson and David Moses. Just a group of baseball fans who all support different teams on this national holiday. We're going to get into that with the entire second half of our show. But first, we're here to talk about some Redbird sports. But I first want to check in with our resident Cardinals fan with the game pulled up on his computer. A 6-6 battle in the seventh in Busch Stadium. What's going on right now, Braden?
Well, it's exactly what we expected. I'm saying ISU because they're also Redbirds. But anyway, the Cardinals' offense looks fantastic. I mean, when you've got Tommy Edman in a nine hole, you've got some fantastic offense on your side. And that had been a problem coming out of the last postseason, the past several postseasons, actually, is just inconsistency. Occasionally when the offense doesn't want to get things going, that shouldn't be much of a problem anymore this year. But we also knew that the starting rotation left a lot to be desired, and a really rough under four innings outing for Miles Michaelis is not a great start on opening day. But we kind of expected that, and the offense has been able to get this team going as well. It's a tight game to finish this one out, so it's going to be a pretty good start to the season, getting some exciting action.
And, of course, David Moses, our resident White Sox fan, 5 minutes away from the start of his season. The Astros currently getting their rings, raising their banner, whatever they're going to do.
The fanfare
before the game.
No one cares. The
team trying to play spoiler, the Chicago White Sox. David, what's the status of your team pregame?
You know, unlike Braden, I can have all the optimism I want. I believe that they're going to come out here. They're going to play. We do have some holes, but it's going to be all right. I'm excited for this year to finally get started. You know, the great thing, and I was going to save this for a segment, but the great thing about opening day is that it's during the week. Everybody's doing the same thing, whether you're at work, whether you're at school, hiding in the bathroom. You're trying to watch your favorite team play, and I've been on the edge of my seat all day waiting for the White Sox.
We will get to more opening day when we do. There was one team that won today, so we'll talk about them later. But we want to first talk about the Redbirds softball team. We're doing mostly a baseball-themed episode. We're going to have a little bit of talk about some basketball. And first, the Redbirds softball team, who they're 14-15 on a year, but have won 9 of their last 10 and 5 in a row, 4-1 in conference. Guys, it did not look good for a couple games in for the first couple weeks for this softball team with a new coach in her first year, but they have really turned it around, Braden Fogerson.
Well, it's been a great start to more conference play. Starting with that Murray State tournament, they ran right through that. They looked fantastic in it. They have had great pitching for the past several weeks, and aside from one game that they dropped against Belmont, like you said, just a great, great streak of games that they've just been able to put together really well. And it's all been the same story for all of them. They've had really, really good offense. And for pretty much all of them, just good pitching to go along with it. You get run support. You get good outings on the mound. That is a great key to success in conference play.
You know, I've really been impressed with this squad, you know, especially the last few games. They're on a 5-game winning streak, like you said, Mikey, and you can tell offense has been the forefront of, you know, game plans because, you know, 15-0, that is absolutely amazing. And then, you know, when you get into what really won them that game against Valpo, three things come to my mind. It's their efficiency at the plate, that's number one. You know, you got Dana Kennedy going 2-for-3, Delaney Bryant 2-for-2, Kaylee Cheval 2-for-3. They're not missing out on opportunities, which is good. And then their strong defensive performance, only allowing one hit, you know, flying fast to the baseball and limiting errors. That's pretty big for a team, you know, and helps with success. And cheering each other on. I think you can tell in the locker room or on the dugout, these players, you know, they are wanting to encourage each other, especially during, you know, play. So it translates to the field, and I'm glad that they're starting to really, you know, get some wins under them.
And they have lots of games at home this weekend. They canceled their game at home tomorrow in favor of playing Saturday at 4 p.m. Brayden will be on that call. And Sunday, a doubleheader, I'll be on at least one of those games. So, and quite possibly both. So we will have, as those games are scheduled, we will have those to you for WZND. Of course, big rain coming tomorrow, so that could affect it for the rest of the weekend. But as it stands, one game Saturday, two games Sunday against UIC. Then they have Bradley during the midweek, 2 days in a row. And fellas, the rest of this MVC schedule just keeps shaking out in favor of the Redbirds behind this Valpo sweep. I think they have a pretty good couple weeks ahead of them.
Well, it's all about momentum in this sport, especially for softball, because communication is even better in softball than it is in baseball. When everyone is feeling good and the communication is at its top, at its peak, it leads to results. And for this Redbird team, when everyone's feeling good, they're playing good. And now that, like I've said, when you're in conference play, those games mean even more than when you're just facing teams that you'll only face once and probably won't again for the next 5 years or so. When you are now facing the teams that each game means that much more and makes that much more difference in terms of your outlook on the standings, it's important to be able to get your momentum going then. And so that's what's been working out for this ISU softball team right now.
I definitely agree. You know, I'm all about momentum. In the past five games, which is what they've been able to win, I think they have a very good chance to catapult above 500. But did anybody realize UIC's record? 0-28.
I was about to say it. Like, I wanted to hear from you guys first, but 0-28 on the season. They've lost 28 straight games since the season begun. They lost to open the year against North Texas, and between UConn, Iowa State, Michigan State, Clemson, Tennessee, Oklahoma, Kentucky. Man. They played a lot of great non-con teams, but then they get into the Valley. They got swept by Indiana State in a non-con game. They lost 6-3 to Northwestern. They had a game canceled against Eastern and then got swept again to Northern Iowa. They got a game canceled against Notre Dame this week, so that would have been fun. And then they and now they're coming to face the Illinois State Redbirds at Marion Kinnear Stadium. So
I just have to tell you, we cannot be the first win of our season.
No.
We have to win all three of these games.
Yeah.
That's embarrassing if we lose. We cannot do that.
They're looking like the TV10 softball team right now.
This is pretty bad. The UIC softball team, they're looking like the Redbird women's the Bradley women's basketball team this past year in conference, who was right there on that same record. So for the rest of the season for the softball team, as I said, I think it's going to be Bradley, Missouri State, and then Drake, U of I, Northern Iowa, Evansville, and so mostly all MVC tournament people, but one nice midweek against U of I, and I think both for baseball and softball. That's something fun that they do every single year, visiting Urbana to just play a team that is not a conference team, but usually a tough opponent, David.
But, you know, it just sucks because it's on a Tuesday. Like, who's going to be able to make that game, like, at 5 p.m. on a Tuesday in Urbana? Like, I would love to go see U of I versus ISU. Unfortunately, I don't think I'm going to be able to do that.
And that's the same thing for the baseball team. They have a couple games coming up that are on those Tuesdays. I, unfortunately, have class on Tuesday night. So, I mean, a U of I track would be interesting. It would be kind of fun. But, yeah, those midweek games are fun, but sometimes tough to get out to.
Yeah, but, I mean, at the end of the day, it's only an hour away. So if you can find time in the midweek to see ISU face Illinois. Obviously, it's a big rivalry. It's a really big deal for Illinois State to go up against a team that on their bar stool likes to call us their little brother team. And obviously, you know, you want to be able to show them up whenever you can. And ISU baseball last year looked really, really strong against them.
Good segue, because we're going to spend about a couple minutes here before we get into our interview discussing the Redbird Redbird baseball team. Now, we can't say anything too bad because Augie Rasmussen is in the building staring at us, making sure we don't say anything too bad. But it's hard to not say anything bad about them, or it's hard to say something bad about them considering they beat number 25 Iowa 5-3 on Tuesday. That was a great win. I don't know if you guys caught that one, but a couple good wins in a row for the Redbirds, including that one, David Moses.
I caught it on ESPN Plus.
Oh, come on.
Where my guy Mikey Fornelli was on the call.
There, yes, I was on the call and it was fun. It was a good win, but all around we had Blake Borgart and Max Martin on WZND. And
I was
listening to that one. They did a great job on that too.
I'm sorry, this is WZND.
They did a great job on that call. A really nice job by Luke Chang late in the game to steal home for that insurance run. Iowa went cold in the last couple innings in that game, was really the big story, and Sean Sinisco with a nice outing. And all around, they've done pretty solid this season when it comes to these games where you're playing opponents that are a lot tougher than you are, I would say, fellas.
Well, it comes down to the bullpen. I think last year a lot of ISU's losses came down to the fact that they didn't really have a strong enough bullpen. And when you can go up against a team like Iowa and late in a game find your ways to get an advantage, get momentum, get the bats rolling as well, that's a big deal, because last year the bullpen didn't get much help. You know, the offense would die out a lot late, and now that you've got a brand new looking offense with a lot of talent, a lot of young talent as well, it's a completely different looking squad than what we saw a year ago.
I don't know. We almost got Arkansas again. Tim Zalabek was there in the building. They were close to it against Arkansas, and a possible win there. How cool would that have been to defeat number 3 Arkansas 2 years in a row? Would have been pretty remarkable. But looking at the rest of the schedule, I mean, David, I'll take a look. But you have something to say before that?
No, yeah, I was kind of just piggybacking off of what Brayden said. I think one of the noticeable differences is, and we're going to talk about it with the White Sox as well, I think it's underrated how important it is to have depth in your bullpen. When you're able to have that, you're able to be flexible, versatile with who you want to put out there, why you want to put up out there, and what situations. And I think that's something that the Redbirds have done pretty well.
Looking at the rest of the schedule, Missouri State this weekend, as of right now, Friday at noon, that's a change from 5 o'clock, Saturday 3, Sunday 1. We'll see what happens with upcoming storms, possibly tomorrow and the rest of the weekend. But for the time being, that is the schedule as it stands for the Redbird baseball team. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Augie's going to join the show and talk to us a little bit more and tell us why we're completely wrong about all of our takes about the bullpen and stuff like that. You're listening to the Red Zone.
Hi, this is Paul DeYoung, former ISU Redbird, current St. Louis Cardinal. You're listening to Red Zone on WZND.
Welcome back to the Red Zone. Mikey Fernelli, David Moses, and Braden Fogerson coming at you from the WZND studio. Joined in our fourth mic by Augie Rasmussen of the Illinois State baseball team. Thank you for coming in today.
Yeah, no problem.
So you came in to ISU from Iowa Western, 271, 423 on base. So obviously you had a great season. But what made you pick ISU versus anywhere else to come play college ball?
I mean, the coaches were a huge part of my decision, and I just really liked the atmosphere here, and the campus was great, and my visit went really smooth, and the coaches kind of preached the things that I'm about on the baseball field, so it was just a perfect fit.
Yeah, I mean, oh, sorry, David, but I was going to say, you talk a lot about the coaches specifically, both coaches. There are a lot of different coaches, and we've had multiple ballplayers in here in the studio, and we've always asked about Coach Holm, but we hear that Wally's a big impact person, too, in that staff. Can you talk about Coach Kranzer there?
Yeah, I mean, he's the go-to guy. I mean, he always gets your swing right. He's coaching you every day and always in your ear, and he was a great player himself, so it's not tough to listen to him.
Can I just start off before we dive too deep into the sports and then into your life by saying that you have an awesome name? I mean, when I first saw that you were going to be coming on the show, I was like, I know that for a fact there's no one on this earth that has the same name as you. I mean, just imagine how many Mikey Fornellis do you think we got maybe roaming around South Dakota somewhere?
Right.
You got an awesome name, brother.
Yeah.
But anyway, let's talk about your transition to ISU to start. How have you acclimated to your new team?
Oh man, it was a perfect fit right away. I mean, all the guys just welcomed all the new guys in. We had a lot of new guys come in, and it was just, they welcomed us in right away and just kind of showed us the ropes of how it's done here.
Are there any specific vets that really were pretty essential to that welcoming process for this huge group? So I mean, I got the list of you guys here: Shai, Daniel Pacella, a bunch of guys who have been big impact players early on who are new to the team this year. So who of the veterans was really helpful in that process?
They were all helpful, but I think the one that I kind of talked to the most and relied on to kind of show me around is Chang, Luke Chang.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he's been here. This is his third year here, and he knows everything that you need to know about ISU, and he's the go-to guy.
You can see that from the outside, that no matter what, how it's going for Luke, it seems like he's always vocal when it comes to the team and to his play and everything like that. So that's really cool to hear from a teammate.
And Augie, what I'd like to be able to ask you to start, 15 games played already, you've got a lot of playing time to start out this season. Was that kind of an expectation heading into this season, that you would be kind of a regular part of the lineup, or was it you know, even something that, you know, when you were talking to Coach Holm for the first time, that was something that he talked about, or was that expected?
I would say kind of getting, as we were getting closer to the season in the wintertime, he kind of had meetings with us and told us what our role was going to be. And so, I mean, I kind of knew going into where I was going to be at, but I mean, things can change. It's baseball. I mean, you gotta go out and earn it every day.
So you played in that game against Iowa, obviously, out there in the outfield. We talked about it in the last segment. Take us through what happens in the locker room after a big win like that. I mean, is everyone just juiced up, or is there still more work to be done mentality?
Yeah, I mean, right after, the boys are electric. I mean,
yeah,
it's just a good vibe. But I'd say after the night, after you get a good rest, it's back to work in the morning in the weight room and at practice afterwards.
You have a great game. Let's say you get a big hit. You have a great game. You're tired. You on your way home. Is there one place in Blono that you're stopping to get some food so far?
I like Moe's.
Okay.
Moe's is my go-to.
Is that a team-wide thing, or is that just you?
I think it's a team-wide thing. Moe's Monday is a huge thing. Everybody gets it on Mondays.
Really? Before practice, afterwards, something like that, or?
Afterwards. It doesn't sit too well before practice.
I wouldn't think so.
Yeah.
You talked about the games upcoming that you have. You got Missouri State, who's kind of, you know, teetering around that 500, and then obviously Illinois, who, you know, we were just talking about in the last segment, is always a good game versus ISU. What's the message going forward? You know, what has been the message to the team to really, you know, piggyback off of that Iowa win?
I just say just take it a game at a time, kind of focus on ourselves and not necessarily who we're playing, and just kind of go into it just playing the best baseball we can play individually and as a team.
Now, Augie, what is another important part of where your game is now is your off-season prep. And I was able to watch you a lot during the KCL playing for the Bobcats, a 3.7 WAR, which led the league by a ton over the rest. And I just want to be able to ask you, you know, when you played so well and, you know, when you're building not only confidence but also showing everyone else what you have, when you go through the KCL, what are you trying to build upon? Are there certain goals that you need to be able to focus on, or do you just go in there just trying to work on your game as a whole and just see where it takes you?
I just say, yeah, work on your game as a whole. It's good in the summer to get as many live at-bats as possible to just be comfortable in the box and ready to roll in the fall when you get to your school.
So there are a lot of other ISU guys who also played in the Colonel Collegiate League. Was that a chance to maybe meet some of your teammates or some other guys who go to different schools and stuff like that too?
Yeah, I met a lot of my current teammates in the KCL, and that was kind of my first interaction with a lot of the guys. And I lived in the apartment all summer that I do now, and had my roommate Luke Lawrence with me, so
nice.
I got pretty tight with him too.
Yeah, I talked to Luke on TV actually a couple weeks ago. He's a real good guy too. So I know you both were in that Collegiate League too. So with Luke and with all these other people that have came in to the Redbirds this one year, is there a pretty good bond among all you guys as first year players?
Oh yeah, we got really tight really fast. I mean, everybody just kind of meshed with each other well, and just we got a good vibe in the locker room.
Can you say that, you know, being able to meet them earlier in the KCO helped translate communication on the field today?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it was awesome playing with who my future teammates at the time would be in the KCL, and just kind of getting used to them, and just went into the fall comfortable with a lot of guys on the team.
So tell us a little bit about your early days in baseball. What got you into it? Was that the only sport you were really into as a kid or anything like that?
Yeah, I mean, baseball has always been my main sport, but I also played football and basketball growing up. But my dad played baseball at Iowa Western also, so he was a big factor in kind of me choosing baseball.
Was he your coach growing up?
Yeah, he coached me kind of all the way through. He helped out with the high school team. He wasn't a full-time coach, but he helped out.
Was this always the goal to get here to play college baseball, or is there bigger dreams?
I mean, yeah, the college baseball has always been on my mind. I think anybody wants to play Division I baseball. I mean, any baseball player. But right now I'm kind of just taking a step at a time and just kind of being where my feet are.
Absolutely.
So what made you choose ISU specifically?
The coaches were great. I mean, they were really personable right away, and you don't really get that with some places.
What was it about, you know, their personality towards you that you stuck them apart from any other school? Were they just welcoming you, or telling you what, you know, what they can do to help you out, or?
Yeah, they kind of like laid it out what they're going to do and what they want from me. And I think a huge thing was they're all former players, and they all played at a high level. So they kind of can relate to the same struggles and successes that we go through as baseball players.
So I've got to ask you about the new rule implemented in the MLB, pitching clock. What's your take on it from a baseball player perspective?
It's kind of early to tell, but some of the stuff in spring training, I think, seems like it's kind of taken it too far, all the strikeouts that I've seen from it. But I understand why they're doing it, but I don't know. It just kind of, the flow of the game kind of seems all choppy with it.
It's funny because I saw a Snapchat the other day. A guy was ranting. He said, I literally just left a 2-hour and 10-minute baseball game, which is unheard of. He was like, I went to go get a hot dog and a pretzel, came back. It was already at the bottom of the second. I was like, oh my God.
The Cubs game today was 2:21. It was remarkable. Augie, are you a big MLB fan at all?
Yeah, I'm a big MLB fan.
Which team?
The Royals.
The Royals. Very nice. I know. I saw it. You said it was from Nebraska, so mm-hmm. That makes sense. So were you? So yeah, you're about our age. So you were around when the Royals won the World Series not too long ago. What was that experience like for you, just as a fan?
Oh, it was awesome. It was big time.
Did you go to the parade and stuff like that? Because it was 2 years in a row, but pretty solid team.
No, I didn't go to the parade. I wish I would have though.
Was there a favorite player for you growing up on the Kansas City Royals?
Yeah, Alex Gordon for okay. sure. He's a Nebraska guy.
That's very cool.
Is there a player today you try to emulate your game off of?
Not really. It's tough. I mean, those guys are so good. It's so hard to emulate them.
But the Royals specifically don't really have very many leaders that are like that type of person that you would really, you know, fall in love with as a baseball player anyway. So maybe it's just like where the Royals are at now. Everyone's just kind of solid, but they don't stand out.
The man's just telling us his favorite baseball team. You're just roasting the Kansas City Royals.
To be honest, I'm a Cardinals fan. I have nothing against the Royals because I, sure. you know, if I lived on the other side of St. Louis, I would probably hit the Royals, but no, they're cool. Yeah.
Well, David asked you a little bit about the pitch clock thing, but that's something that's been in college ball for a long time, and there's plenty of stuff about college ball that's totally different than the MLB, like aluminum bats and the pitch clock thing and all kinds of, you know, plenty of players pitching and hitting. Is that ever something you've tried to explore, pitching as well in high school or in college?
No, I gave up pitching in eighth grade.
What happened to make you, it seems like there was maybe an event.
Yeah, I couldn't find the zone. I could throw hard for an eighth grader, but I was nowhere close to the zone.
Just a bit wild?
Yeah.
Maybe coach will bring you in just to scare somebody someday. Maybe in a spot where you're up 10 runs or something. That'd be kind of fun.
Yeah, that would be fun.
But we wanted to ask just a little bit more about you and just the rest of the year for your team. So, of course, you can tell us about your personal goals, but just as a team, what's it looking like for the rest of the season as you get into conference play now?
I think we're looking to win the conference. I mean, that's the best goal you can have, and win the conference, get to a regional, and see what damage you can do.
Where is the confidence in terms of, you know, how you've had such a hot start to, a hot start to the season in terms of playing some of the tougher opponents and being able to both win against Iowa and nearly win against Arkansas? Where's the confidence level in terms of when you do start getting to play some of the more regular opponents that you get?
I mean, I think we're ready. We don't really look at anybody and think that we can't play with them. I think we can play with anybody in the country. We just got to just kind of rely on each other and just keep playing as a team.
So we talked about those midweek games right before you came on. You were still in the studio for that. Is that, you know, what's the mentality of the team on just a one Tuesday game versus a weekend series? Is there something you guys specifically like better, or you personally, or are you just kind of indifferent about it?
I think we're pretty indifferent about it. I mean, we just look to go in there and win the game. I mean, just like the weekend series, but the only difference is, I guess, you're trying to win a series on the weekend instead of just one game on a Tuesday or Wednesday.
So you're going to be playing number 17 Iowa again in May. What things do you want to take from your last outing versus them to translate it into that game to have similar success?
I mean, I think we just got to attack them the same way we did. We kept their bats cold all game. Our Sean did well starting the game, and then Hart and Eli came in and shut the door, and we just we put up enough runs to just top them. So I think we just got to keep the same approach.
Now, right now, it's still the very beginning of spring. Weather hasn't been consistent. But as it gets into the summer, it gets hotter, the ball travels further. Is there any sort of difference in terms of what you're expecting when that becomes a thing? Obviously, you played baseball even before reaching here at ISU, so you know, what that weather's like. What are you expecting here?
I think the bats just get hotter when it's warmer out. It seems like the ball flies more, and guys are just really getting into it.
How do you stay warm and stay on your game when you have an entire weekend canceled like we had 2 weekends ago, or you've had, 5-6 cancellations already? Obviously, that's probably hard, but how do you keep up with it? Do you still practice indoor and stuff like that?
Yeah, you just got to practice with high intense, just kind of game speed practices, and we get live at-bats against our pitchers, and they throw live, so obviously that's kind of keeping us in the groove of hitting.
I know you weren't here last year to know what the before was, but what's the new hitting facility down the first baseline kind of been like for you guys? That place where you can, kind of stay warm and stuff like that.
Yeah, that's awesome. It's nice to go down there before games, and we go there before our BP, and we'll hit, and then after BP, if you want a couple more swings, you can go down there and hit some more. So it's good to get a lot of swings in there.
Augie, thanks for joining us. Anyone you want to give a quick shout out to before we let you go?
Oh man, I'll just shout out all the boys.
All of them. The boys, what'd you say after the Iowa win? It was electric?
Yeah, it was electric.
I love that. When we come back on the Red Zone, we're going to get into the NBA just a little bit before we head back out to some baseball for opening day.
This is Barstool Big Cat, and you're listening to the Red Zone on 103.3 WZND.
Mikey Fennelli, David Moses, Braden Fogerson. It's the Red Zone on 103.3 WZND. Augie Rasmussen has left the studio. Great to talk to him. David is a little bit upset because he didn't get to ask him about video games, which he wanted to, because he said he's now an MLB The Show guy. And during the commercial break, Braden Fogerson told him he is completely wrong. It's super mega baseball, apparently. So
it's such a fun game.
What is that?
So super mega baseball started as a game that was like very much like comic-y, like not really serious, but just more fun,
like NBA Jam kind of thing.
So like, well, it's not like NBA Jam like level comical, right? Yeah. But it's not like Diamond Dynasty, like playing online,
like
level
real baseball
sweat.
Yeah.
And they've now made a third one, and I've been able to make my own like MLB, like my full MLB teams.
Well,
that's I have a lot of time on my hands sometimes, and I just think that's more fun than playing MLB The Show, because I'm horrible at MLB The Show. So
I'll let you know when I break Aaron Judge's record and roll to the show.
Okay.
I'm still with the Birmingham Barings, but we're on our way to the White Sox.
Oh, okay. Jazz Chisholm. Okay, that's who it is. I thought maybe J-Rod was on the cover of MLB The Show 23. Did you, David, did you pick to be on the White Sox, or did you just organically get drafted?
Mikey, come on.
No, I thought maybe you got drafted. Okay, because when I would play like 2K, I was never really into MLB The Show, because as much as I'm probably a bigger baseball fan than any sport, I always had an Xbox, and MLB The Show was always PlayStation until recently. So I would always play NHL or NBA 2K, and whenever I would do like in my career, I would never let myself just pick the Blackhawks or Bulls. I'd be like, if I'm going to be on the Blackhawks or Bulls, I'm going to get drafted there or do well enough to get like a free agent contract someday. Mm-hmm. And I'll never forget, after 3 Stanley Cups with the Toronto Maple Leafs and like breaking Gretzky's goal scoring record 3 years in a row, I signed a 7-year contract with the Chicago Blackhawks and finished out my career with Kanan Toews.
I'm coming home.
So that's my little tidbit as we finish this good radio of sports video game talk. And we're going to get into a little bit of NBA, which David's favorite here, our resident NBA expert. He was at the All-Star game this year, if you haven't heard. We talk about it a lot. But you were very much into this year of the NBA, David, and now we're almost entering the playoffs. What's the status of, first, our Chicago Bulls, and second, this NBA playoff picture, David?
I honestly don't know I feel like the Bulls at this point, they can't lose enough to get out of the play-in. So I think the play-in is a lock, even though technically, numbers-wise, it's not a lock. The Bulls, I don't know. They can't stay healthy. Andre Drummond, Andre Drummond is a different story.
Yeah.
He stopped for different reasons, I believe, mental health reasons. So that's always okay. But, you talk about Javonte Green, who's a key part on defense. He hasn't been healthy generally the entire year. I don't even want to get into Lonzo Ball's situation, who might not even touch the floor again, sadly. It's just been an inconsistent year, whether we are losing against teams we shouldn't be losing against or winning against teams we absolutely have no business staying with. it's been a weird year, to say the least.
There's seven teams that have clinched the playoffs in the NBA so far with about little under 10 games to go. Milwaukee, Boston, Philly, and then in the West, the Nuggets and the Grizzlies. And then I missed one on each side. Cleveland and Sacramento. Those are the two that I feel like even from the tip of this season, we would have been like, wow, they're in the top seven teams at the end of it. That's pretty cool for both the Kings and the Cavaliers.
But, you know, Donovan Mitchell, he's really grown on me in Cleveland. I think that they, you know, I don't know this year they'll be a championship contending team, but sooner or later they'll get there.
We've talked about it on the show, the quietest 70-point game of all time. Yeah.
He actually made that prediction at the beginning of this year, talking about Cleveland being a really good team.
He did, but it evens out because of all of Dane's bad takes.
Well, I mean, Cleveland kind of just had the perfect rebuild in terms of, you know, you lose LeBron and he's the guy that you run an entire team around, and then you just immediately find just a bunch of good players, especially guards. Like, they had found so many good people at that position in terms of, you know, people to build upon, people to work on, and they've just had a lot of success in the draft. And when you have teams like the Thunder that was stockpiling draft picks for a while, find a team that can not only get those draft pick opportunities but also hit on those picks, you can make a team as good as the Cavs have been right now.
Let me tell you something. I am so scared for the dynasty that is about to come in Oklahoma City. I don't think people realize how good the Thunder are about to be and how already talented they are. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is set himself this year as one of the league's premier shooting guards in the league. But you also got Josh Giddey, a good stretch four, who is just absolutely a beast on defense. They got a couple studs. You're not going to know their names, so I'm not even going to mention them. And then they got like 20 draft picks in like the next 3 years that's all in the first round. And God forbid they get this number one pick in this draft and get Victor Wembanyama. And we haven't even seen Hulk. Like, it's just, oh, my goodness. The Thunder are going to be very good.
Well, drafting's a lot harder in the NBA than other sports, you know?
It is.
I mean,
look
back on drafts, like, how many of them were obvious hits or even, like, really, really good players? Like, it's not very many of them. Not that, like, you get to the second round and it's, like, impossible to find talent. There's always those, you know, those diamonds in the rough, but it's a lot harder to be able to scout talent and get those players that you can build upon for later.
Whenever I hear something like that, I always imagine, what would it have been like if the Portland Trail Blazers didn't take Sam Bowie over Michael Jordan?
Or when they didn't take Kevin Durant.
Or like Greg Oden or something.
Oh my goodness.
That would just be terrible.
The Bulls... That is crazy to think about. A crazy alternate universe where the Bulls didn't draft Michael Jordan. What would the Bulls be?
I mean, probably would be a poverty friend.
Yeah, in a city like Chicago, which is crazy.
They might have found someone good still, but it wouldn't have been MJ, yeah.
Well, when you think about it, I think, you know, before MJ got there, I remember watching The Last Dance. They talked about it. The Bulls were terrible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They were getting outsold by an indoor soccer league.
Yeah.
Which is absolutely embarrassing. It just shows how bad... how poorly they performed. So to see how far they've come, I know now, you know, we have so many question marks, but when you look at this team, they are a perennial team in the NBA when you think of just the best.
Well, I mean, the problem is, I mean, Chicago has been and always will be a soccer town. That's the premier sport to follow. I don't know if there's any other teams that anyone like as much as their soccer team.
I'm a big Red Stars fan these days because Mallory Pugh, now Mallory Swanson, Dansby Swanson's wife, was part of the reason Dansby Swanson signed with the Cubs. So I am a huge Chicago Red Stars fan now, and she got the game-winning goal the other night.
Now,
meanwhile, our tight end got traded away right after his wedding.
Yeah, for Vegas, yeah.
I don't remember too much of know too much of soccer, but is Zach Ertz's wife still a member?
You're putting me on the spot, and I feel bad not knowing, but I really don't.
I can look that up here. It's
go ahead and look it up. I remember when she was here, and the same reason for J.J. Watt. That was everyone thought J.J. Yeah. Watt, when he got released by the Texans, could possibly come to either Green Bay or Chicago.
That
so he
just brought back a
wife.
Lot of memories, yeah, for sure.
But yeah, there is all kinds of connections in sports between women's and men's professional leagues that every time something like that happens, they just assume they are going to come to Chicago so they could be closer to their significant other. And the only time it ever worked out was Dansby Swanson with the Cubs, who played great today, by the way. But we'll get into that in the next segment.
It looks like she might be on the U.S. team still, but she has not been a Red Star since 2021.
Okay.
All right. Well, there's your answer, David. Well, but, you know, this segment started with the NBA, so maybe we'll finish it with the NBA. I was going to say, what teams do you think are the front runners at this point that –
you know, boom or bust, you're going to win the chip or it's going to be a failure. I mean, there's plenty of teams that are borderline playoff teams. Okay, just proud to be here, Cavaliers type things. But, like, who's like, okay, you came this far, and if you don't come back with a trophy, you know, that doesn't count.
I don't know, man. Like, especially with the West, like, the West has been so open. Like, I really can see a couple of teams in the West making it to the finals. I say if you let the Warriors and Steph Curry get hot, you know, which is what it's looking like, you know, they can make the finals. They've been there. Kawhi Leonard's been playing really good. Once they get Paul George back with that strained knee injury, he should be able to help take the load off of him, which is always dangerous. And then you got the Suns, who are finally getting Kevin Durant back. You know, last night he came back. I think he scored, what, 16 points on limited minutes. But it looks like he's going to be, you know, getting back into the swing of things. But then my sleeper is a team that I think people should watch out for and not let get hot. Because honestly, if they made the finals, I would be very upset. That's an ugly finals. The Sacramento Kings, like, could you imagine them in the finals? Like, ew.
Remember the last time the Kings, like, had a legit, like, finals contending team and then, like, NBA sold to get the Lakers in the finals instead?
Yep. I mean, that Kings team, I tend to disagree a little bit with David. I think it's kind of fun when you see teams like the Phoenix Suns a couple years ago and like the Sacramento Kings, who are not the big dogs, the blue bloods of the NBA. They're not the big dogs. They're a mid-major school, basically, in the NBA. And you see these teams going to the level of these big teams. Like, I mean, in baseball, you see it all the time. The Tampa Bay Rays making the World Series and stuff like that. That always puts a smile on my face because it proves that, like, you have no excuse. Like, if, kind of like you talk about with the Thunder. Like, if the Thunder become good again, it's kind of like, what is the excuse of the Bulls? Or what is the excuse of a team that has that much money, like, the middle of the pack in this time? So, I don't know. I tend to side with the underdog when it comes to finals runs. And if it comes down to, like, let's say the Kings and the Bucks or the Celtics or something, I'm going with the Kings no matter what.
Going with the underdog says the number one Tom Brady fan. I don't believe it. I cannot
Fair
believe
enough.
That.
Fair
let's,
enough.
Let's flip things over to the Eastern Conference. It's easier to break down. I mean, you got the Bucks, who are at the helm of it all with 55 wins. And then last night they had a just monstrous performance against Indiana, with Drew Holiday scoring 51, and then
he's been so
Giannis
good this year,
having a 38-point triple. It's just they are, and if they let Chris Middleton get back healthy, that's going to be a scary team in the playoffs for sure.
I won't downplay the incredible talent of Giannis Antetokounmpo. He's a legend, one of the best players of our time. But it is helpful in a 55-21 season right now for the Bucks that the year that Chris Middleton kind of falls off, Drew Holiday becomes a full and through all-star, scoring 30 points a night. I mean, that is crazy.
Well, you can't win an NBA title or compete for a title every year with just one star player. And to be honest, having two star-level players is still oftentimes not enough. So it's Brooklyn. Good to be able to see that Drew Holiday was able to get things going and be that replacement there.
When you look at Drew Holiday, it's so inspiring, but you're so happy for the guy because you're talking about a guy that's been in the league for a minute,
mm-hmm.
And now he's regarded as one of the best defensive guards that you have in the NBA. I remember when he was with Philadelphia and they were going against the Bulls in the playoffs one year. I was like, who is this guy? But now, I mean, you know the name for sure. Now, looking at the second spot, you got Boston, who's always, you know, they've been a really consistent team this year with that backcourt of Jaylen Brown and not backcourt, but just Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum. What do you guys think about them?
I feel like the Celtics have been kind of assumed to be the main pick for the East. I don't know if I agree with it necessarily because the Bucks have really been playing pretty solid, but I still don't disagree with the idea that the Celtics are still, like, they have to be able to make it to the Eastern Conference Finals. And they should be expected to be competitive in it. And it's going to be very disappointing for them if they don't make it to the finals and then probably make up for their championship hangover from a year ago.
Well, they beat the Kings the other night, 132-109. So I don't know, Mikey, if they It might just be a Western Conference thing, if you know, because it's obvious the Eastern Conference is a stronger conference than NBA this year.
I'm glad you brought the Western Conference back up, because to wrap up the segment, I know you probably wanted to talk a little bit about LeBron James and the Lakers, and he's back. He's not injured anymore, or for the most part. He came off the bench against the Bulls. Is he starting again for the Lakers? I don't know.
I'm not sure, but I know he's back. He scored 30 last night.
Yeah, he's back. So LeBron James and the Lakers currently sitting at 500 in a spot for the playoffs. What does that situation look like for them out in the Western Conference? What is all the goal there? Because for a while there, didn't look like the Lakers would even make the playoffs.
That's another thing. Do not let them get hot. Do not let, especially LeBron. I mean, he's been there. When you think of, aside from Steph Curry and the Warriors dynasty, when you think of finals appearances, you think of LeBron James.
Yeah.
He knows what it takes to get there. And then you got an AD who's been hobbled, you know, here throughout the season. But what I saw last night was a motivated AD. That guy was dunking on Nikola Vucevic almost every other play. So if you got an AD like that, anything can happen, especially if you pair him with
LeBron. Was what helped when they won the ring in 2020 in the bubble, because, you know, LeBron won the finals MVP. You can't not downgrade one of the best players ever. But Anthony Davis played out of his mind that series against the Heat and that whole bubble. I mean, he was far and away the second best player in that tournament.
Well, I think that another thing that is kind of interesting is that you've got a pretty legitimate shot that the Clippers play the Lakers at some point if they can make that momentum, get that run into the playoffs. And I think that would be a pretty dang interesting matchup, because they've always had a rivalry, but I don't think we've ever really seen them have a series in the playoffs, have we?
I don't know, but it'd be a Staples Center showdown, because for the time being, the Clippers still don't have their new stadium.
Oh, they're out there. They literally wouldn't have to go anywhere.
They're getting close. They're getting really close to the new stadium, because I love that picture of Russell Westbrook with the construction gear on. It's pretty funny. When he has the hard hat on and the glasses.
They should have never let that happen.
No. And every time he misses a shot, they say land bricks and they post it.
Now, hold on, because we love to talk about Russell Westbrook when he has a bad game.
Yeah.
But we have to talk about him and give him his props when he has a good one. I'm pulling up his stats right now.
He's been playing a lot better.
But, man, with the wounded, like, Kawhi didn't play last night, nor did Paul George play last night. So he was the leading scorer with 36, 10, and 4, I mean, on 35 minutes.
That's vintage Russ. That's MVP Russ.
That's the type of Russell Westbrook that won MVP, that broke Oscar Robertson's triple-double record. So I want to see more from him.
Absolutely. We're going to wrap up that segment at that. When we come back, a little bit of some opening day. It looks like it's this tough situation out in Busch Stadium. Brayton's on the edge of his seat. We're going to come back with this last segment of the Red Zone.
Hey, this is Dickie V, baby, and you're listening to the Red Zone, baby, only on 103.3 WCMT.
Welcome back to the last 15 minutes of this episode of the Red Zone. We saved the best for last, MLB opening day. Maybe I'm a little bit partial, but I'm a huge baseball fan, and I will start the segment by saying the Chicago Cubs, as it stands, pre-Cardinals win here, are the best team in the NL Central.
Well, before we talk about the Cardinals, I feel like I might jinx something, so as long as you guys can stall and talk about Cubs, we can... Yeah,
as it stands, it's two
Cardinals
on,
are
nobody
up one
out
in the ninth, right? And they're almost about to win, right?
Two on, nobody out.
Let's not say about to win, because Helsley's got runners on the corners.
Runners on the corners.
Yeah, I just tried to jinx you.
Yeah, runners on the corners, no outs, top nine. Cardinals up 9-8 to the Toronto Blue Jays in an interleague opener. That just feels weird. But, David, the White Sox are underway, but the Cubs have their game finished. I don't know if you saw anything. I know... We talked about it earlier. We were texting about it, but the Cubs got a 4-0 win. All the runs coming in one inning. Dansby Swanson went crazy. Marcus Stroman, 6 innings, 8 strikeouts. Are the Chicago Cubs back, or am I too excited?
I think you're just too excited, Mikey. And can I just, you both got to talk about your teams. Give me my little, ladies and gentlemen, boys. I wrote this out, so we're going to say it.
Oh, okay, here it is.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, tonight is the final night where you'll be able to hop on the Chicago White Sox bandwagon. After tonight, it will be too late, and you will officially be labeled as a groupie, which is frowned upon on the South Side. I don't know what they do over there on the North Side. That's their activities. But I guarantee you, we bleed black and white from day one. I don't know how long Mikey has had that Cubs jersey. I don't know if he got it the day after they won the World Series
I was full, through and through even as a kid, but this one does have the World Series patch. It doesn't help my case.
But yeah, I'm so excited to get things kicked off here. Like you said, we just got started with the White Sox. It's going to be a fun season. I'm just excited. That's all I want to say.
I love that you wrote that all out. I didn't write anything out. Go Cubs.
But going back to your Cubs, man, I don't know. Like, yeah, I'm always going to say it's too early to tell. I think, you know, first game of the season, the White Sox won their opening day game in 2018 against the Kansas City Royals. They finished that season, I think, 62-100, something like that.
Something crazy.
So let's pump the brakes, Mikey. It's gonna be all right.
Augie's gonna love you mentioning that.
Yeah, the Royals. God, I mean, okay. The White Sox right now, by the way, nothing in the third inning. So Dane probably bet the Nerfy somewhere out there, and he's happy. But but no, the Cubs had a great win today. I'm not gonna get too ahead of myself. I'm just excited that the Cubs have an identity. They're saying this year is next starts here, meaning the next great Cubs team, as Jed Hoyer always says. And I think, yeah, they finally kind of separated themselves from the World Series roster to a team that is the next great team. And I'm shaking, and Braden's shaking his head because I think the Blue Jays just tied it.
Well, yeah, this bullpen is going to be tough to figure out, and I don't think any of the relievers that came in looked all that good so far. But Helsley's not off to a good start as the Cardinals closer this year. Already a blown save for him. It's the bullpen and it's the starting pitching that you have to figure out, because this offense is unbelievable. I mean, a 4-year-old could run this offense and get them good 5 runs most days. But, you know, the pitching has just been horrendously managed ever since the Mike Matheny days. And honestly, to me, John Mozeliak just keeps replacing their managers with other yes men, and it just continues to not work because they don't want to make bigger changes than just the guy that gets all the blame for the losses.
WZND, FM radio station by day and by night, is a counseling center for St. Louis Cardinals fans. You still have Busch Stadium, though. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, David is a huge Busch Stadium guy after we saw it in St. Louis. I wish we could have stopped in and hung out there. If the Redbirds would have kept winning, we would have maybe had a chance to go walk around and stuff, because Ballpark Village is really cool. Have you ever been there aside from when we were there, or no?
So I've been to St. Louis, but I've never been to Busch Stadium.
Yeah.
But that first time seeing, I mean, I don't know if it was just we were going at night and all the lights were on and it was very pretty or whatever you want to say.
Really,
but it was just very, it gave you that throwback feel, you know, Wrigley Field type of feel. You feel me? Like,
yeah, absolutely.
Well, I don't agree with the Wrigley Field thing, but that's
what?
It's pretty good, because, like, not only is it a beautiful stadium, just like Wrigley is, I'm going to be fair, Wrigley's a nice stadium, but it's a beautiful stadium, and it's also affordable. You can, especially if you're in, like, September, you can get outfield seats for, like, around $10. You can just take the Metrolink into the stadium. It is an affordable experience, and it's a great experience. There's not a bad seat in the house.
I was going to say also, I mean, I was going to give Busch his flowers, too. Like, David said, it seems like, even from just passing from the outside, it has the same charm as Wrigley, and would agree it's close. It's not, I know, I'm never going to say it's the same, but it's close. And I've been to one game there, was Cubs and Cardinals in the last week of the season, 2021. The Cardinals had already clinched the playoffs. The Cubs were way out of it. So it was fun though. The Cubs won. But anyway, I will say
that
the thing about Busch that was fun is it has that old stadium charm, but it was made only, you know, just over 20 years ago, right?
Like it was 2006, yeah.
Yeah, so less than, yeah. It was, yeah. So, I mean, yeah, it was the first, it was the year they won the World Series, right? Mm-hmm. It was, yeah, so.
That's right, yeah. Mikey, it is the
I'm
year
proud of
they
myself
the
for
World
knowing
Series.
That. So I, but, you know, this Cardinals team has a beautiful stadium, and I saw, we talked before the episode started, Braden, they had Adam Wainwright sing the national anthem.
Yeah.
Which was pretty cool, no matter how you look at it.
He's got that little country twang about him, too.
A couple weeks, we're going to get that audio for the show, right?
I thought about doing it today, but I held back. But Adam Wainwright singing the anthem was pretty cool. But as this Cardinals game continues over here, what's going on there, Braden? Give us a quick little play-by-play.
Well, you had a runner advancing the second. Looks like they got the force out. Now they got one out, and it's the same situation. Still runners at the corners. They just traded an out at second. So one out and runners on the corners, and now you are a pitch away, but still very high-pressure situation for both teams.
I get there's almost 20 runs in this game, but this game is proving that the pitch clock doesn't truly matter. It won't change it too much, because as much as the Cubs had the 221, we are nearing hour 4 of this one, because that one started at 3, right? So, you know, by 7 o'clock, that's hour 4.
I mean, yeah, and considering – oh, okay, there's a wild pitch. But anyway, to get back to it, when you have a pitch clock, you're trying to speed the game up. But still, when you have these really good games where both teams are great on offense, it's worth it to spend that extra hour at the stadium, because it's just nothing but action. It's nothing but fun. And, you know, a 9-9 game in the ninth inning is a great way to start the season. It's also, you know, as for the Cubs and White Sox, they're off to a, you know, pretty good start to their season as well, though.
Let's run down what happened today so we can completely over-exaggerate, you know, the futures of teams with 161 games left. We're acting like it's football. The Yankees beat the Giants 5-0. The Braves beat the Nationals 7-2. The Orioles defeated the Red Sox 10-9. The Cubs beat the Brewers 4-0. The Rays beat the Tigers 4-0. The Rangers beat the Phillies 11-7. The Pirates beat the Reds 5-4. The Twins top the Royals 2-0. The Blue Jays and the Cardinals currently 10-9 in the top of the 9. Sorry if I just spoiled it. Actually, just have it in your computer as I said it. The Mets and Marlins is final 5-3 Mets, although they had apparently both Scherzer and Verlander are now on the IL. I don't know how you injure two starting pitchers in one game. And then they have the White Sox and Astros scoreless in the third. Coming up tonight, Rockies and Padres, Angels and Athletics, Diamondbacks and Dodgers, and then Guardians and Mariners.
Well, how crazy is it that the Yankees and Giants play right after Arson Judge gets signed to the Giants? You remember that day on Twitter?
Yes.
That was a ridiculous moment.
Because they almost got Aaron Judge, and then they got Arson Judge, they signed Mitch Haniger and a bunch of other decent players for this Giants team, and every time they would sign a couple okay players, all the comments would be, how much help does Arson Judge need? How much help does Arson Judge need? It's just too funny. It's just, like, how close of a name can one person have, and especially for a team that
was
reported he signed with the Giants. Like, they, like, kind of like the Correa thing. Like, there were, that's how you can't trust it till it's on paper, and they say it themselves. There were reports, legit reports, Ken Rosenthal, Jeff Passan, all of them had their reports. Aaron Judge, not Arson, Aaron Judge is going to be a San Francisco Giant. And then, like, a week later, he signs for $1,000,000,000 with the Yankees.
Okay, I'm sorry, Mikey. We have 4 minutes left in the show, and we've barely talked about the White Sox. I'm disappointed in both of you. You all have
all right.
segment.
Here's your four minutes until the Cardinals walk it off, and then we take over.
I'm gonna give you a fast little synopsis of all the notes I wrote down in these last 4 minutes. We cannot finish 500 this year. The scapegoat in Tony La Russa is gone, so that is wonderful. I hate to see Lueri Garcia go, and just because, you know, he was such a nice guy. This is more about money as opposed to, you know, the player. It was clear from the beginning of training camp that this would be a position that would be under a microscope by management, and obviously he did not win that job. So I hate to see him go, but obviously he spent 9 years here. Fans got comfortable with him, so it's good to see fresh faces on the team. Another player I would love to see have a great year is not going to be playing tonight. Lucas Giolito is way better than a 4.9 ERA. We've seen him become a ace pitcher before, but last season, the 2022 version of him, I want to throw that version of Lucas Giolito out the window. I know what I'm going to get from a Dylan Cease. I know what I'm even going to get from a Lance Lynn. Mm-hmm. Lucas Giolito has the ability to make or break this pitching room, and I think that he needs to have a great season. Yep. I'm just going to leave it there. Oh, and watch out for Luis Robert Jr. He's a junior now, so don't get it messed up or he might not talk to you.
He's a junior now? How do you become a junior when you're...
I became a junior late.
How do you become a junior late? I'm genuinely curious.
So here's the thing. If you don't have the same middle name as your dad, you're not going to be a junior, right?
Uh-huh.
But if later down the line you still want to be a junior, my name is David Andrew Moses.
Right.
My dad's name is David Allen Moses, but I can still be a junior.
You could still change it.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So, well, this is great that we're talking about your birth again. And
oh, yeah. So, I don't know.
We got like a minute left. Do your shout out. Yeah.
There's no way. I got two shout outs. There's no way that I can put this on maybe our Twitter.
Tweet
but
it.
There is a picture of me when I was first born that I saw today that almost made me cry. I'm not going to lie. It was, and Braden caught the live reaction from it. I was like, whoa, that's me. And then another shout out. I want to give a shout out to Papa Bear, my dad, David Moses the first, I guess. It's his birthday today. Happy birthday! I know you're at dinner, but love you,
Papa Moses. He was a Red Zone guest when we did the Thanksgiving
the zone.
Special.
I think
he
made a couple good predictions.
We did a Thanksgiving special. He was on that time. Yeah, he's well, just like you. He's got that football mind, but about baseball mind, I don't know. You're a White Sox fan, but you had your whole words. You had your whole words thing. We all got to get out of here. That's been this edition of the Red Zone. Thank you for watching. I don't know what's going to happen in this Cardinals and Blue Jays game. If you know Braden Fogerson, send me your condolences if they don't walk it off here. I'm Mikey Fornelli for Braden Fogerson and Dave Moses. Have a great night and watch some baseball.
to hear this and other past episodes of The Red Zone again, download the Red Zone podcast online at WZND.com or on iTunes. And of course, tune into The Red Zone every Thursday at 6, right here on 103.3 WZND, the pulse of Redbird Nation.